You're listening to Don't Blink, the Doctor Who podcast on Golden Spiral Media. I'm David Ward, and joining me is my co-host Wayne Henderson. So don't blink, don't even blink. Welcome back to Don't Blink. I'm David.
And don't be fooled by my creepy disguise. I am truly Wayne, and to prove it, go pack, go.
And in this show, we're discussing Doctor Who Season 10, Episode 11, World Enough in Time.
Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah, I can't remember an episode of Doctor Who getting under my skin like this one. I have lived and breathed this episode since it was on Saturday, and my jaw is still on the floor. I think we're probably very similar in our host ratings.
Okay, so getting under your skin in a good way.
I think so. I mean, in some ways, in a bad way too. But it just nailed me. I think your rating is going to be similar to mine, but I'm very curious to hear what you would give this out of 10.
Okay, if I have to assign it a number, let me start off by saying, by a mile, this is the best episode of the season. And I'm going to give this one 9.5 out of 10 IV drips with volume knobs set all the way to 11.
You know, I'm going to give it 10 out of 10.
10?
10 out of 10. 10. So if there were a number higher than 10, I can't imagine such a number, but if there were, I would give it that. I'm going to give it 10 out of 10 daps. This was extraordinary TV. And I felt this bodily when I was watching it. This really affected me, and I absolutely loved it. So can't wait to hear what our listeners say about it. And I just thought this was such a great piece of TV.
Oh, absolutely. And stay tuned, because we have a lot of listener feedback, some great voicemails, some Facebook feedback. Everybody's chiming in with thoughts and theories of what is going on and what they hope is going on for the World Enough and Time. Oh, yeah, so, so good. I've already watched it 2.5 times. Definitely going to watch it again before the finale. In fact, we might as well just watch it every single day this week, so we will be ready.
Yeah, you know, I might well do that. And I love that it starts off with a regeneration, and like that's the least interesting thing that happens in the episode.
It caught me off guard for a minute, but they were kind of doing something similar to what some other television shows have done, but so well. Do you assume that this scene is going to be the final scene of next week's finale episode? And they're just giving us a bit of a teaser?
Don't think so. I think it's going to be Christmas. I think that that's actually, we're going to see that probably in December, which is a long ways away. I know. Think about that. I assume that he's at the North Pole. I assume it's going to tie in with the 10th planet, which was the first Doctor's last story. But who knows? And I think there's going to be some madness next week. So I'm really curious to see where they take it. And you know, as frustrated as we are now wanting to see next week's episode, I think that this time next week, when we're waiting for the big cliffhanger to be resolved, we're going to be much, much more frustrated. So
we will be counting down the days until Christmas for lots of different reasons. Yeah,
exactly.
So well done. And I took a peek at my DVR, and I'm not sure if it automatically was padding time, but it looks like this finale episode coming up next week is going to be a little bit longer than the rest of the episodes, which makes sense because they've got a lot of things to resolve.
Yeah, somehow Stephen Moffat has a sort of superpower that when he wants to do a feature-length episode, the BBC gives it to him. So sometimes they'll go up to 60 minutes from the, you know, usual, like, what was it, like 43 minutes and then the credits and everything. So I've absolutely no idea what's going to happen next week, but
isn't it great being spoiler-free and just having all these ideas swimming around in your head, and we just have to wait and see what's going to happen?
Oh, I love it. I love it. What's interesting as well is, for me, I've got so much emotional investment in Missy's being good and staying good. And there's not a chance in all hell that's going to happen. But yeah, well, or maybe, I don't know. Maybe she will. I mean, I hope. Maybe she'll save the day at the end. But there are so many things kind of, for me, emotionally hinging on this next episode. And Bill as well. I have got a feeling they may actually do it. You know, like, Moffat's brought back a bunch of his companions before when he's killed them off, but I don't know that he will with her.
Yeah, and especially without Moffat being there next season, it doesn't give him much time. And, you know, even Darth Vader was able to be turned back to the light side in the end. And speaking of Darth Vader, let's say that the doctor's no when he was regenerating is far superior than Darth Vader's was in Star Wars Episode 3.
It was, yes. It absolutely was. I sort of hope I die on my deathbed at the age of 207. But like, if I have a second choice, it would be in the snow yelling the word no. That's how I want to go out. So.
With your hands and head glowing.
Yes, exactly.
What'd you think of that great? I mean, to me, it was great looking, that gigantic 400-mile-long spaceship.
What a great idea. That whole time dilation thing is extraordinary. I'm told that the science of that is relatively sound as well. Obviously, time around a black hole is extraordinarily distorted. But the idea of something that big and that vast is really frightening. And also just trying to get your head around the idea of taking an elevator down into a different time zone yeah. is really good. It's just brilliant. Okay, let's go back a step. I loved at the beginning Missy walking out into that spaceship and saying, "I'm Doctor Who." Like that, as a lifelong fan, just made me so happy. And it's like Stephen Moffat. It's like that. He's being quirky because it's his last day in the office, right? But somehow he's achieving more than just by being so relaxed. He's achieving more than. You know, he ever did before. The Wives of Riversong, the Husbands of Riversong was supposed to be his last episode. Right. So the Christmas special a while back wasn't all that great. If that had been his finale, what a shame. This, though, is him going out just in extraordinarily good form. Like he's literally given the Doctor's name as Doctor Who. I love that. I should hate it, but I love it. And,
yeah,
off the bat,
the way it was done is what made it so fabulous.
And then Missy does her little dap move as well. I'm like, could we just keep her? Can we keep her on the show, please? I want her to be a regular now. I wanted that, and I was the same with Nardole. I didn't want him to be part of the TARDIS crew. I want that whole group to be tooling around. And I suspect I'm going to be sadly disappointed. But
and I remember at the beginning of the season when we saw a few little clips. And there was that short clip of Missy doing the dab. I know there were some people on Twitter that were like, oh, come on, the show's gone too far. But in the context of this scene, it was just brilliant. All of the inside jokes and her acting, the way her and Nardole and Bill are just coming out onto that headquarters or whatever you call it of the giant spaceship. And she's claiming to be Doctor Who. And then she goes into her deep Scottish accent. I'm saving us valuable minutes here.
It's wonderful. And one of the things that Russell T. Davis used to do is they would have what they would call tone meetings. So he was very interested in making sure that there was a sort of consistency of tone. You mentioned Star Wars earlier on, and that's one of the big problems with the prequels is that the tone was horrible. The way that they would go from comic relief to sort of dark, especially in Revenge of the Sith, to dark drama just didn't work. In this, the tone is all over the place too, but somehow it's incredibly cohesive, and I can't quite figure out why. Because this is one of the darkest Doctor Who episodes I can remember seeing. I mean, it's outright sinister at points, but then it's funny when it needs to be as well. And I'm having watched it twice, I'm still not quite sure how they've sort of pulled that off.
How the magic happened. I can tell you what, though, this scene here with Missy and Bill and Nardole, notwithstanding all of the other fabulous things in this episode, but even just this scene is the best part of this entire season of Doctor Who.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. And, you know, the Doctor does, again, he does his like self-aware sort of speech, you know, I'm going to save everyone on this planet type thing, and it just doesn't work. And she gets shot. And it's not a sad moment, it's just a strange moment, which I think is actually what happens in real life when bad or scary things happen. I think that's often how it feels. It's not panicked or sad, it's just strange. And so when you see her with that big hole through her chest, it's just you go into shock as a viewer in the same way that she is.
Right. Absolutely. My wife watching the episode with me, she hasn't been kept up to date on the podcast. She's trying to stay totally out of the loop. She had no idea even that the actress was probably leaving after this season. So she was beyond shocked when Bill got shot and ended up with that giant hole in her.
Yeah. And then what a wonderful sequence where they go back to the doctor and Bill on the rooftop talking about the master, mm-hmm. which to me evoked my favorite parts of the Russell T. Davis series, which was with the John Sim master. And, you know, there are little musical sort of callbacks to the, there's a piece of music called This Is Gallifrey, Our Childhood, Our Home, which is so lovely. And that music came in. We had the Night on Witch Mountain theme that the master has, that kind of swirling sinister music as well. So there were so many callbacks, but it was just such an odd, strange moment where they're on the roof and they're eating chips. It's just a normal thing. And he's talking about his friend, his first man crush, as he says. And it's, just beautiful. The whole thing, this had me absolutely pinned to the wall. I don't know how they did this episode so well. The director, by the way, Rachel Talalay, I think her name is. I forget the pronunciation of her last name. She is one of the most talented directors, I think, that television has at the moment. And she did Hellbent, the one where the doctor's being chased around by the creature in the castle.
Love that.
She's extraordinary. And she's one of those people you just know if you put her in front of good material, you're going to get something like this. But, oh, wow.
In some ways, it's kind of sad to think that so much of this previous season almost seemed like they were treading water. Although there were a lot of high points, there were some low points, and we just knew, and with bated breath, that it was all leading up to this. And in the end, all that matters is this episode delivered.
Yeah. And then some. So I've got to ask you, hand on heart, did you, cause I actually had been spoiled on the fact that the master was Razor. Which actually was okay. Watching it the first time, it added an element of fun knowing that he was underneath there. But did you know that that was John Sim under that makeup?
Okay, I've got my hand on my shiny new metal heart with a shout out to the German heavy metal band Accept. No. Not until like the final 60 seconds when he really started giving his speech, I did not know. Now, I did know, not because of spoilers, it just seemed kind of obvious that Bill was going to become one of the Cybermen, but I did not know that Razor was in fact the master till about a minute before he whipped off the mask in devilish fashion. And it was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, supposedly, so they went out and the sequence where he takes Bill out from the hospital, they filmed that on location and no one even knew it was John Sim.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, the fans were there watching him do it, and they didn't get it. So Millennium Effects is the company that does the prosthetics and a lot of the props and so on. And they did an amazing job for sure. I mean, it's funny, you can kind of see him under there, but you kind of can't. And it was just such a callback to classic Doctor Who that he would use these bizarre disguises for no reason whatsoever. And I kind of like that they did that. There's no reason he needed a disguise, but it was fun, so it keeps him entertained.
And to throw us off, he looked kind of creepy. He talked a little bit like Igor, you know, in a Frankenstein story. It was just all so weird. Now, when I watched it the second time through after knowing it, I picked up a few little clues. But again, with I'm really only knowledgeable on Doctor Who since the Eccleston years. So, you know, I didn't suspect so much of the crazy disguise, but on second watch, it's like, that makes sense.
Yeah. And I love that they really played the idea that Missy couldn't remember it, which like they just rolled with it. And I like that. And that's going somewhere interesting. And we can talk about that a little bit later on, but we
have to talk about that. I have questions.
Yeah. I got a lot of questions too. I just like the way they set it up. But so you've got this, it starts off, it's very funny and it's light, and you've got Matt Lucas there doing his thing, and you've got Michelle Gomez, and then suddenly you get Bill in the hospital And now it becomes something that I've never seen Doctor Who be. It was so sinister and so weird. And that extraordinary incidental music, like that choral kind of music that's going in the background when she's walking around seeing the sort of the early Cybermen.
Yeah, so much beautiful and fantastic music in this episode.
Yeah, and it just, like I say, got under my skin. I mean, I have not been able to stop thinking about this piece of TV. And I wonder what it must be like to be 10 years old watching this, because I'm almost 40 and it's like I can barely sleep. It was so great. I also absolutely, and this is obviously people are waiting for me to say this, but I love the fact that the Mondasian Cybermen are back, and they are much more terrifying than the kind of stompy Russell T. Davis ones. Like, they're frightening. They're odd and they're weird. And I think it takes a lot of guts to bring back a monster like that and just say, okay, we're gonna dress them up like we did in 1966.
That takes a lot of guts because, you look at them in without the critical eye or without the knowledge of their story, and you look at some of those old black and white still photos or short scenes from 66, and you're like, really? They were scary? But then you see them in this episode, and you're right. So much scarier than the modern Cybermen we've seen in recent seasons.
Yeah, there's something about them. I don't know what it is. I mean, the sing-song voices are sinister, and they really play that up. The whole thing where they're tapping the keyboards to say, really sad things is... It was a gutsy decision. So the costume designer who designed those original Cybermen, she's still very much alive. I just heard an interview with her the other day. I hope she's proud. I really hope she watches these episodes and is like, with her kids and her grandkids, and it's like, yep, I did that, because it's beautiful. And I love that this is the sort of the quote unquote genesis of the Cybermen episode, because they never really did that. They sort of did with, again, in the David Tennant era, but to have this as the genesis story is terrific.
And isn't it amazing that they were able to make this episode about so much more than just being about the Mondasian Cybermen and their beginnings? The fact that they could blend it perfectly with this whole Master and Missy side story as well, I don't know how they fit it into one episode.
Yeah, I don't know either. And there's just an atmosphere about this episode that, like, right from the start, I mean, I think I held my breath for about 50 minutes straight. And when you look at it, I don't know quite where the tension was coming from, but they just telegraph to you very, very clever writing, very subtle writing, that this is important and this is going to be a thing. It was, oh my goodness. And of course, John Sim right in the middle of this being the comic relief, which doesn't make any sense either. It's just brilliant. Like, it's just, yeah. Oh my goodness.
And the fact that they were also able to mix in some actual mind blowing that we have a little bit of listener feedback on later in this episode. So stay tuned. Some time travel and time bending thoughts and theories, because like you touched on earlier, David, the ship being so huge, they're by this black hole and they're down in this bottom floor of this giant ship trying to watch the Doctor and Missy up on the top floor, and they're moving at totally different speeds. So you can't even tell what's going on because the Doctor's eyebrow on the television screen has been raised for what they say about 2 days or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, and they play it for laughs, and Sim is amazing as a sort of comic foil, but it's also incredibly sad and dark, and Bill's got her kind of Tony Stark like heart there, and she's stuck in that building for years, and it feels a little bit One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with the matron, and everything like that, and there's just so many things coming at you, and... Yeah, oh my goodness.
And in some ways, it even reminded me of, something that Terry Gilliam would have done back in Brazil or 12 Monkeys. Just, like you said, odd, creepy, scary, dangerous, and futuristic, and old school, steampunky all at once.
Yeah, just even the way, like, everything about this is wonderful. Like, the design of the signage above the the conversion theater. So sinister. It just with a sign and the sound of a drill and Paul Mackie, who's an extraordinary actress, selling her walking down a corridor was just terrifying. That didn't cost anything. No special effects, no, just good typography, good acting, extraordinary direction. This is just very, very intense, and I was just bowled over by this. I genuinely watched this with my jaw, not literally, but I mean, I can't remember being this captivated before. So,
yeah,
just what a way to go out, Mr. Moffat.
Fantastic from top to bottom, and then near the end, all of these scary reveals start to happen. You know, we've got chills and we're getting giddy, you know, as Whovians. You know, we see the beginnings of the Cybermen, and then we find out that Bill is fully a Cyberman. And when Bill sheds a tear and gives us that little callback to the current Cybermen having that little tear shape in their eye.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the reveal of all reveals, the Master. And then Missy, and they have that conversation. My head was exploding.
Yeah, you're right. So there's that little notch on the side of the Cybermen eye units is, and just John Sim seems so dangerous. Like, I loved his Master, and like it's really interesting how he's a foil against Missy. You know, it's not like two bwahaha evil people. She really is, I think, trying, and then he just comes in with that very kind of cold, sort of smug, extremely dangerous kind of way of playing the character. I loved it. And she seemed to turn around on pretty quickly. I mean, I'm such a sucker. I'm such a mark. Like, I really hope she's not going to turn that she's playing her former self. I don't know.
Because at the end of the episode, it did seem like Missy and the Master were on the same page. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, it certainly seems to. And Capaldi sold it beautifully as like, oh, hell, this is not good. Because they've never done like a multi-Master episode before. They've never even come close to doing that.
Now, so, I need to ask you, David, how are they able to be in the room at the same time? Is the reason that Missy says she doesn't remember the Master and this ship and all this planning, is that due to her or him losing something when they regenerated into Missy?
It's never really been explained. I think that Moffat probably is going to have an interesting explanation for it, but there's never been an in-universe explanation of like why you know, do you remember this stuff? Do you forget it when you're in that moment and then remember it later? Or so we just don't know.
Because they remember quite a bit. I mean, the Master and the Doctor remember growing up together, so they remember a lot of their lives. Just bits and pieces seem to go missing, which had me confused. But at the same time, I know it's all for the good of this awesome episode, as well as what's coming next week.
What's really great is that they twist it round, that the previous version, you know, the John Sim Master knows more than Missy does, even though she's obviously older.
Oh, that's right.
Which is clever, and I'm sure they're going to explain it next week, but it's sort of an odd turn of the screw a little bit, and makes them all the more sinister, because how is that possible? So, we've got a lot to talk about next week, I'm sure.
Oh, my goodness. And then they basically wrap up the episode with a very sudden cliffhanger, pretty much, but explaining, because through most of the episode, they kept using the phrase, it's an exodus, but then at the end, the Master tells us it's more of a genesis. It's like, uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a sort of flat-out gag, I think, to Genesis of the Daleks, which was a Tom Baker story. And the fans always wanted a Genesis of the Cybermen. And we sort of got one with Tennant, but not really. And now we've actually got one. And it feels real. It feels right. And wow. If you're listening to this and you're not sure if I like this episode, I really, really did. So
I can't imagine not liking this episode. I mean, I'm sure it happened, but I can't imagine it.
Right. Well, should we go to our listeners? Because I want to hear, more importantly than what I think. I want to hear what the Golden Spiral Media crew think. And I'm hoping it's a positive response.
You just wait. Let's cue it up first because we got many and they're all awesome. Neil in Bowie, a.k.a. Cliffhanger City.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie calling into Don't Blink. I'm just sitting here in Cliffhanger City after watching World Enough in Time. It starts with regeneration about to happen. That's not good. And then we see the start of how he got there. So just why did the TARDIS and the Doctor bring him there? Is there anything positive that it can do in the situation? We have Missy saying his real name is Doctor Who. That's a bit weird. We see Bill have a hole blown into her. That's not good. We find out that it was the Master bringing about the genesis of the Cybermen on Mandus spaceship. That is really, really bad. Master and Missy can both be there the same way that more than one Doctor can be in an adventure together. It's just different parts of their timeline fitting together somehow. But how could they fit a city that we saw inside the spaceship? I have no idea how the finale is going to resolve this. I don't know whether I'll be taking a look at the preview when I watch over and back. Anyway, 900 out of 1,000 floors in the giant spaceship. Just amazing.
That's a fantastic rating, Neil. Thank you so much for sending that in. Great points, David. And going back to Missy saying, my name is Doctor Who.
Oh yeah, I just love that they've enshrined that in canon. That like it's wonderful. And again, Neil, it's always good to hear from you. And you're basically my neighbor because Bowie is not very far from me at all. It's just it's a quick hop over. So always great to hear from you. And thanks for calling in. We'll get a beer sometime, I hope, somewhere, and talk Doctor Who.
Yeah, you guys need to make that happen.
Hey there, me again, Arthur from France, and here I am drinking my tea and about to give my opinion about the first episode of this finale. I'd give it 9 out of 10 because it was wonderful from the beginning to the end. Only one flaw, and I'll start with it. The piece of information given between about the relationship between the Doctor and the Master. For years, it has been kept unknown, and it should have been kept unknown. It has been willingly kept unknown because in the Peter Davison episode Planet of Fire, for instance, the Master tells the Doctor, won't you show mercy to your own? And then he disappears. And actually, the Master was supposed to be the Doctor's brother, even though this wasn't official because the actor, Roger Delgado, who portrayed the Master, died before they could shoot the episode. So I won't talk about it because I don't have time, but it should have been that way, but this should have been kept unknown. But I'm sure the future showrunner will find a trick to avoid that. Anyway, the episode was wonderful. The whole story about Mondes. I know that you're going to give classic homework with the episode The Tenth Planet, which is wonderful. But I think I'm going to advise another episode for you. The Tomb of the Cybermen, because it really reminded me of this. The whole warehouse in which all the Cybermen were stored, it really reminded me of this episode. Anyway, tonight's episode was a wonderful episode, and I'm really looking forward to next week.
So good to always hear from you, Arthur. Thank you. We greatly appreciate it. Sounding great. And what do you think about his point about maybe thinking that the relationship between the Master and the Doctor should have remained unknown and untold?
Well, they've sort of gone back and forth on that, you know, like it does seem somewhat fluid. And I kind of like that. And I think that they're going to go somewhere very interesting with that next week. I think that the story is going to be about the Doctor's feelings for the Master, the Doctor's feelings for Bill. And, you know, there's the whole thing that maybe they were brothers. I don't know that. I kind of like the ambiguity of it, though. But I don't know. I feel like the last couple of weeks there's been something, there's been that chemistry between the Doctor and the Master or Missy. And it almost felt like it could be a romance, which is sort of, you know, kind of lovely in its own way.
For just a minute, maybe about 10 seconds, I thought that same thing. I thought this is more than friendship, but you know, we'll have to see. But, and of course we'll get into your classic Doctor Who homework at the end of this episode, but Arthur having a suggestion of the Tomb of the Cybermen. We'll have to wait and see if that's the one that you assigned to us this week. But first, we need to check in. We definitely need to check in with Long Island because they make beautiful iced tea there.
Hi, this is Fred from Long Island, New York. And in comparison to the ship in this week's episode, Long Island is about 120 miles long by 23 miles wide. And some would say that time moves a little slower on the East End, thanks to our lovely beaches, but that's neither here nor there. All this stuff that happened with Bill this week got me thinking about when's the last time we saw an expendable or a companion or a schnack who lasted past the doctor and had a happy life. And it's actually been a while. If we look at the doctors from the 11th and 12th, not so many. We have Craig Owens, who was played by James Corden in season 6, episode Closing Time. He had multiple visits with the doctor and had a happy life. Also, a more well-known companion, Wilfred Mott, the grandfather, father of Donna Noble. He also went on to live past the doctor and even had a part in regeneration, which is kind of important. But other than that, it's kind of hit or miss. And I don't know if I like this formula, but we'll have to see where it goes from there. Thanks a lot, guys. Speak to you soon.
Excellent. Thank you, Fred. And great to know that even Long Island has its own different speeds of time at different ends of town.
Well, so there is a great Doctor Who convention in Long Island, which I've actually not been to, but I've seen some really good things about it in November, and I do plan to be there this year. So, Fred, hopefully we'll get a chance to say hello then. You're right. Companions don't really have very happy exits for the most part. So will this be the exception? I think probably not, but we'll see.
That was such a great reminder about Wilfred Mott. I loved that character of Donna's grandfather. He was just so laid back.
Wilf was amazing. The scene where he's talking to Tennant in the cafe.
Yes.
And it's Christmas time. Oh, perfect. Yeah, lovely. Absolutely loved it.
Yes. All right, we've got some more listener feedback, more great thoughts and theories.
Hello, Whovians. This is Jeff X-Force 11 leaving my feedback for World Enough and Time. Well, it was a very interesting episode. We knew the Cybermen were coming. We knew the Master was coming. And to tell the truth, yeah, I knew it was the Master was Razor all the time. And I could kind of see that they were moving Bill to be a Cyberman. Now, it has us asking the question, okay, we saw the Doctor beginning to regenerate at the beginning of the episode, and I'm assuming we're going to get to see that maybe next episode. But I am enjoying this episode, this first part of the two-parter. I enjoyed the story, even though I could see things coming, but I am kind of excited to see where they're going to go next and how the Doctor gets Bill away, maybe, and how the Master goes from there to becoming Missy. Well, we'll see. Looking forward to seeing what y'all have to say. X-Force 11 out.
Jeff, thank you so much for your call. Now, before we get into Jeff's comments, I want to remind everybody, keep our voicemail number handy, because after the finale, we need to hear from you. Give us a call at area code 304-837-2278, or by using our voicemail SpeakPipe widget from anywhere in the world at don'tblinkpodcast.com. You've got 90 seconds maximum, I believe, to share your Whovian thoughts and theories. Now, Jeff, he also knew that Razor was the Master, so I guess I got the wool pulled over my eyes.
Well, it's sort of fun, though, when you do know, but you're pretending not to know, you know. And what used to happen in the old show is that they would, like, the Master would come in a really sort of, you just kind of could tell it was him. But there used to be this thing called the Radio Times. Well, it still exists, but it was like a TV guide listing. And whenever the Master was in disguise, they would use like an anagram of his name, of the actor's name, when they would credit him. So it was, you'd always look, like, try and piece together the you know, the different characters to see who the Master was. And I sort of wish they'd done that with John Sim. I'm not thinking on my feet now, and I can't immediately come up with an anagram of John Sim, but if you're listening and you want to come up with an alias for the master, that would be great.
And John Sim, if you're listening, feel free to call and remind everybody that they're listening to the Don't Blink podcast on Golden Spiral Media.
It's funny you say that. Actually, a friend of mine back in the day was quite good friends with Anthony Ainley, who played the master in the Davison era, right? And the Colin Baker and the Sylvester McCoy. And Anthony Ainley was a little bit strange, and I think he did think he was the master. And he would call my friend in character all the time. Say, this is the master calling. It was great.
Oh, you got to be something to be able to tell people this is the master calling.
Yeah, you do. You really do. But
Jeff even dropped a hint that he thinks maybe the doctor can get Bill out of this safely. Wow, if that could happen, I cannot even fathom how that might.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think that we're going to see the doctor go into beast mode next week. Let's be honest. Like he can't be happy with this. So,
yeah, we haven't seen Peter Capaldi go into beast mode that often. And these things might just push him over the edge.
Yeah, the full Malcolm Tucker, for those of you who watch The Thick of It, which I highly recommend you do.
Excellent, excellent stuff. Now, this week, our weekly Twitter poll at Doctor Who GSM, I posted out there, how and where will you be watching the Doctor Who season finale? And 61% of the people say that they are going to be at home, alone, focused on the episode. Whereas 10% of the voters are going to be either at or hosting, like you, David, a viewing party with friends. 23% of the people that voted said they're not sure if they're ready yet for this finale, which I totally understand. And 6% replied with other. For example, Kanan said, I swear if anybody comes in my room and causes me to pause the finale episode, I'm going to go mad. That's understandable. I mean, this is one of those events where, okay, the phone's off the hook. It's out of the way. Doorbell, just leave me alone. And Lola, who's at ScannerDromeMag on Twitter, says she'll be live tweeting during the Doctor Who finale, and she is still shell-shocked over Cyber Bill and the Master and the Mistress.
Yeah. Well, you know, tweet at us. That's good. I'm doing throwing a small party, as you know, and my friend just actually made a macaroon dispenser, which I think is one of the wittiest things I've ever seen. And it works quite well.
I've seen some macaroons. They don't look like they can actually be dispensed.
I was of the same mindset, but no, this thing is quite elegant and is extremely efficient. And I'd forgotten also how tasty macaroons are. So just hit me up if you want to come to our party next week and enjoy some macaroons.
Well, you've got quite a menu lined up. You said what? Fish sticks, custard, carbonated lemonade.
Yes. Yep. And it's, we'll roll. Roll out the red carpet for all my Doctor Who fan friends. So you only get one Doctor Who finale a year. So
that's very, very true. Also on Twitter, Ian Knight tweeted a message and a photo because last week you talked about the old phone boxes being used as libraries. And Ian shared this beautiful photo he took of a red phone box library.
Yeah, thanks, Ian. And I didn't realize how, because you have the kind of like the way that the phone boxes are designed, the little panels, the glass panels on the side are almost the exact height of books. So they look really good as libraries. So it was wonderful to see. You know, they literally call them graveyards. When they decommissioned those red phone boxes, they would stack them by the hundreds in these different storage silos, having torn them out of the ground and transported them, which is quite a beautiful and sort of sad sight, I think. So lovely to see that picture, Ian. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, they're getting a second life. And yeah, follow at Doctor Who GSM on Twitter. Look at our replies from about a week ago. He said, a little serendipity for the Doctor Who GSM podcast as I drove past this a few days ago. Listen to find out why it's significant. And obviously I drove past, turned around, drove back, and then got out and took the picture, then drove past it again, # full disclosure. And Ian says that he watched the latest episode of Doctor Who twice already. It was just as epic the second time around. And the second part has a lot to live up to. Ian's also the guy that designed that really cool poster from one of the first episodes of this year with Nowhere spelled backwards.
Was that him, Ian? The photograph is beautiful, and the posters were great too. So good job, mate. I really appreciate it.
He is definitely an artist. So check out his blog at zort.co.uk.
Yeah, we've got some talented listeners. So again, thanks, mate. Appreciate that. It means a lot. It does.
Great, great stuff. At Ken from Chicago, some random sentences that he was posting out to us. He's a doctor. He's here to help you, Bill. And then, sorry, doctor, pigs are not sentient beings. Their deaths, while sad, are not equal to sentient deaths. And that's one of the things, that little tidbit that had me mark the episode down just a bit. Doctor getting preachy yet again. And Ken was like, so there's an advert to remind you to watch Doctor Who during the show itself? Do they think we're that dumb? Did you see that?
No, I didn't catch that. What was that?
Because I don't know, you sometimes are able to watch the British feed, right?
Yes, I am. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. On BBC America, there was an Apple Siri commercial that says, Siri, remind me to watch Doctor Who.
As if we needed reminding.
Yeah, exactly. Like we need the reminding. Oh, yeah. Also, we even got a comment from Instagram. Scott says, what an episode, but afraid the doctor won't be able to save Bill or Missy, which is why he will regenerate alone.
Yeah, I know. Alone in the snow, like Tennant, or the saddest thing. Love the feedback. By the way, I will say, I have to put my hand up and say, as a godless vegetarian and a former zoo employee, I did used to work with pigs, and they could frequently outsmart me. So don't underestimate them. They are lovely, wonderful creatures. So, but yeah, so the doctor in the snow, someone I saw on Gallifrey Brace said that the doctor must be at this point deadly afraid of Christmas, because every time he regenerates, it is Christmas, and it must be the worst thing for him.
Well, that's a good point. Lots of snowflakes around.
Yeah. But, you know, again, it's really setting us up for the Christmas special, and I cannot wait for it.
And we also got some great listener feedback in our Facebook Don't Blink group. You want to tell us what Fred sent us in the Facebook group?
Yeah, so Fred, he said, I've got a fun decoration for my new home office. I could only find a few curtains with the TARDIS theme. Also, our teenage son doesn't watch too many TV shows, but he does share our love of the show Leverage. We were watching season one, and suddenly I realized that several times already they were name-dropping actors who had played the Doctor, as aliases, for example. Mm. Here's one list of all the references throughout the run of the show. And I love the picture that Fred posted. It was great. Fantastic TARDIS curtains. So perfect home decor.
Yes, we all need that in our house, a little blue goodness. Now, before we get into even more listener feedback, we want to share you some information about another fabulous show that's on the Golden Spiral Media podcast network. It's The Blacklist Exposed. Are you a fan of the TV show The Blacklist? Then you should listen to The Blacklist Exposed podcast, but don't take my word for it.
Hello, Garys. This is Susan Blumert.
Hey, this is Amir.
Hi, it's Megan Boone.
This is Hisham Taufik.
Hey, this is John Bokenkamp. Welcome to The Blacklist Exposed.
The Blacklist Exposed.
Blacklist Exposed.
The Blacklist Exposed.
The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Hear these great interviews and more by downloading the Blacklist Exposed app for iOS or Android, and get all the case profiles at theblacklistexposed.com. Holy smokes, that voiceover guy sounded a lot like me.
Yes, he did. And The Blacklist is great. If you've not watched that show, I highly recommend it. James Spader is so good in that. And I'm so glad that Golden Spiral is doing a podcast about that. So listen to that, folks.
Yeah, Troy Heinrichs and Aaron Peterson are knocking it out of the park. The Blacklist, they have all those actors from the show recording little bumpers for them. That means they're rocking it. So be sure to check out their show.
How cool is that? Very, very jealous. We need to get Michelle Gomez to come and do a couple of bumps for Don't Blink. I'm sure she'd be willing to.
That would be the most amazing thing ever. She could do it in her regular Missy voice, or that strong, it was a Scottish accent, right? When she was kind of chastising Bill.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So if you know Michelle Gomez, send her our way, because we would love to have her on the show.
Absolutely. Also, Trevor Hedden in the Facebook group. Well, to state the obvious, it's not a good first episode for someone new to the show. So, yeah, I could see that point. That's the one occasion where I could see someone not totally loving this episode. If they've never seen Doctor Who before and they're watching this trying to figure out why we're all getting goosebumps and shedding tears.
Yeah, we're kind of into the weeds at this point, but that's okay. Neil Vestal said, I think this might be the strongest first half to a two-part season finale that we've had since the revival of the series. I'd agree with that. I was completely captivated by the story. So far, I found the season to be relatively weak, and I especially grew tired of the Doctor's blind plotline. But this season is really ending with some fireworks. The Bill conversion has succeeded in doing something that they attempted a few seasons back with the conversion of Danny Pink, and that is to truly shock the audience. And I feel that they succeeded. I'm giving this one 11 out of 10 polarity reversals. I think this might have been Capaldi's strongest episode yet.
Oh, I think Neil is on to something with that. I totally forgot about the Danny Pink Cyberman episode, and that was only, what, two years ago?
Yeah, one or two episodes ago, yeah. And I really did feel like this was Moffat having a second run at that episode, Death in Heaven, Dark Water. To me, it wasn't completely successful, but I feel like he was just trying to do what he wanted to do again and has just nailed it. And again, think about it. Like, if he'd have left a season ago, it would have been the narrative would have been, well, Moffat didn't leave on a high, but, you know, he had his time. To come back this strong at the end of his run is extraordinary. And I'm so happy. I have a very, very, very good feeling about the Christmas special, too. I'm almost more excited about that than about next week's episode. But we'll see what happens.
Time will tell. It's going to be almost 6 months in between, but
time will tell. It always does.
Yeah. If we can build our TARDIS and get it working, then we can, fast forward all the way to the Christmas episode, but I have a feeling we must wait. Neil also added some other good stuff about time, and he's done some math for us. Tell us about it, David.
Yeah. Okay. So this is interesting. Neil figured out the math of the time dilation, and he said approximately 1 second in Doctor time is equivalent to 40 hours in Bill time. Also, taking time dilation into account, the 20 people who went down to the bottom floor 1,000 years ago easily multiply into tens of millions of people in those 1,000 years, and which only 2 days took place on the top floor. One would wonder why they didn't just hop back in the elevator and go up like the top knots at the beginning of the episode, but I would assume the Master might have had some influence over their return. Knowing the Master, he would set plans into motion and then pop into the top floor for a cup of tea and go back down. Right. Good tea or bad tea. And go back down the lift after a generation or two had passed. Timey-wimey. Absolutely. I just imagine a guy like riding up with his cup of good tea waiting for everything to kind of germinate downstairs.
That's amazing stuff, Neil. Thanks for doing the math for us, because math on a podcast, it always gets a bit tricky. And yes, I loved the comment you referenced where Razor talked about the bad tea. Ugh.
Yeah, indeed. So I think this draws us slightly closer to Doctor Who classic homework. And I'm going to do something slightly different this week. Arthur talked about Tomb of the Cybermen. Yes, do watch Tomb of the Cybermen. By all means, watch it. It's a terrific piece of TV. When I was first a fan, it was missing, completely gone from the archives. You'd never get to see it again. Then they found it. Wow. So I've got it on my shelf. I'm looking at it right now. And my DVD shelf is incredible. But actually, the classic Doctor Who homework I'm going to set is going to be not an episode, but a documentary.
Mm.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. It's on Dailymotion. We can post this on the Facebook page, so you don't even need to get to BritBox. And it's called Resistance is Useless. And it's a wonderful documentary about the classic show. It was made in 1991. It was what really brought me back in as a huge fan. And it just gives you a real flavor of the sort of slightly scary, wonderful nature of classic Doctor Who, which this episode had. So Resistance is Useless. It's like 25 minutes long. It's a blast. I love it. please do watch it and let me know what you think about the old school show.
And you think it'll be easy enough to find?
Yeah, it's on Dailymotion. I think it's on YouTube, so we can just post it straight up on our on the Golden Spiral Media page. We don't even need to link to BritBox or anything. So it's just a really good sampler, and it's fun. It's lovely.
I'm all about fun and lovely. I did watch a little over half of The Stones of Blood, last week's homework with Tom Baker, and you were right. Somewhere around the midpoint, it does make a really weird shift. I can't even put a finger on it, but all of a sudden it was like, is this still part of the same story?
Right, it's great. It's great until it's not. But you could see the through line from last week's episode with the Romans and the Stones of Blood. I mean, there is that atmosphere to it, and then it sort of shoots itself in the foot quite horribly. but if you like ravens and sort of spooky outside filming, that's the episode for you.
Yeah, it was very well done. This was a good series to recommend, this particular story, and we have, a great appearance by K-9 in all of his clunkiness. K-9 getting some surgery done on him, and I was just, had to hold back a few chuckles there, let me just admit it.
Oh, it's terrible, isn't it? Like, he sort of, you can almost see the guy out of shot with the radio control unit, like, driving him around. Like.
Yeah. But, and then so good.
And then there's wonderful Tom.
Yes.
Love Tom Baker. Oh, my dears. He's so good.
That's a pretty good impersonation. That's about what part of that episode sounded like. But that was good homework last week. So I will definitely track down Resistance is Useless.
Resistance is Useless. It's so lovely.
Don't get it confused with Resistance is Futile. That's a whole different sci-fi universe.
That's a Star Trek thing, right?
I believe that's where that phrase would take you in the search results.
There you go.
So that was so good. I can't wait. Is it Saturday night yet, David?
Yeah, I know. Really, I know. I'm like, yeah, it's what, like five more sleeps till Doctor Who, right?
Okay. Well, we should get an advent calendar and open up the doors and pull behind the TARDIS and the sonic screwdriver. World Enough and Time. I'll just have to watch that another couple times. I just want to thank you for listening to Don't Blink again this week. This week's call to action, a brand new shiny rating and review in iTunes would be super nice. Thank you in advance. And David, speaking of shiny, as I try to fit this device on my head to forget about the pain.
Exactly. Yeah, go to don'tblinkpodcast.com. Please do subscribe. We've got next week coming up. We've got the Christmas special, and maybe we'll do something, maybe a post-season wrap-up as well. So we want to hear from you. We want you to subscribe. And until next week, remember, don't blink. Don't even blink.
Thanks for listening to Don't Blink, a Doctor Who fan podcast, part of the Golden Spiral Media Podcast Network of shows. I am the Doctor in Utah, and the majestic tale of a madman in a box are used with permission by Silver Screen Records. They're composed by Murray Gold and performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Ben Foster. Taken from the original Doctor Who soundtrack, Doctor Who Series 6, available on Silver Screen Records.